And welcome to Volume 45, Number 20 of Grapevine, your weekly local news magazine. Brought to you by the Great Yarmouth and District Talking Newspaper Association, this edition is published on Friday the 16th of May, 2025. I'm Graham, your presenter, joined this week by newsreaders Margaret and Andy. And in the news this week, continuing issues at Caister Medical Centre, the JPH parking system is delayed, and a 100-year-old Hopton Bible has reappeared. Lots of news stories this week, but before that, we have the birthdays. Three special days to report this week, with good wishes going out to Mabel Wanless for Tuesday, Joyce Ruskin for Wednesday, and both a happy birthday greeting and our wishes for a speedy recovery for Grapevine member and listener Dusty, celebrating a special birthday on Thursday. Okay, time for some news, so it's over to Margaret and Andy.
Hello, and it's Andrew and Margaret with this week's news, and I'm starting. We have a teen in court. A Norfolk teenager has appeared in court, accused of threatening another person with a knife. Zach Payer was one of three individuals seen chasing people through Broad Row in Great Yarmouth. A knife was spotted in the chase, which happened at about 12:40 p.m. on Monday, April the 14th. Payer, 19, and a man in his 20s, were arrested on suspicion of a fray and taken to Great Yarmouth Police Investigation Centre for questioning. Payer, of Marketplace Dereham, appeared at Norwich Crown Court, sitting at Whitefriars, on Tuesday, May the 13th, having been charged with a fray and threatening a person with a knife. Ian James, representing Payer, revealed an offer had been made to the prosecution in terms of pleas to offences, although time would be needed for the Crown to consider these. Judge Anthony Bates adjourned the plea and trial preparation hearing until May the 27th, giving the prosecution an opportunity to consider the offer that had been made. Payer was remanded into custody until the next hearing. As previously reported, the man in his 20s was released on bail with conditions while the investigation continues.
Hello, this is Margaret, and it's my turn to bring the news now. So, if you're sitting comfortably, I'll begin. And my first news item is Steam Engine Rally set for May Bank Holiday. Drive a classic steam engine and take a turn on the carousel from Chitty Chitty Bang Bang at an upcoming rally. Strumpshaw Steam Engine Rally is returning to Strumpshaw Hall near Brundle from May the 24th to May the 26th. Around 40 large steam engines from the 19th and early 20th centuries will be on display, including the ex-mayor, which has been refurbished ahead of its 100th birthday this year. Visitors aged over 18 will be even able to climb behind the wheel of an engine themselves. A traditional funfair will also be in attendance, including the Downs family's Pride of the South Gallopers, which took part in peace celebrations at the end of the Second World War in 1945, and featured in the Chitty Chitty Bang Bang film. Other highlights include a special display of field marshal tractors, a beer tent, and a selection of classic cars, motorbikes, fire engines, army vehicles and model steam engines. Tickets are available on the Strumpshaw Steam Rally website and will be listed for the discounted rate of £12.50 for adults until midnight on May the 23rd. This price will go up to £15 after this date. Under-16s go free and opening times are from 9 a.m. till 5 p.m. each day.
A much-loved willow tree on South Town Common is to be cut down following safety concerns to the public. In a statement, Great Yarmouth Borough Council said, "We know how much the willow tree on South Town Common means to our community. It's been a familiar and much-loved feature of the landscape. Unfortunately, following a recent professional assessment, we must now make the difficult decision to remove it. Over time, the tree has developed significant basal decay, and despite historic efforts to manage the risk, including repeated crown reductions to reduce wind pressure, the decay has now progressed to the point where removal is the only safe option. Despite the tree being loved by families using the children's play area, the risk of stem fracture or wind throw is now too great. The council is currently considering future planting to maintain the green spaces in the town."
Two vitally needed new Norfolk schools have been delayed, affecting hundreds of pupils and heaping further pressure on stretched council budgets. New special schools for Great Yarmouth and Downer Market to take in 270 pupils were approved in 2023, but the schemes are in limbo because the government has yet to stump up the money. Millions of pounds is needed to build the new free schools for SEND, that's Special Educational Needs and Disabilities youngsters. But Norfolk County Council's official hopes they would be built and opened for September next year have been dashed. Even though Academy Trust sponsors are in place to run the schools, at the North Dean School site in Great Yarmouth and Ryston End in Downer Market, the council has heard nothing from the Department of Education, the DfE, about the money. There are concerns that because the government is in the midst of a review of SEND funding and policy, decisions over money for the Norfolk schools has been put on ice. County Hall officials have confirmed the planned 2026 opening dates have had to be pushed back to 2027, at a time when pressure and the costs for specialist school placements is rising. Penny Carpenter, the council's cabinet member for children's services, said, "We urgently need the government to release the capital investment for the two schools, which were approved nearly 2 years ago. We want children with additional needs to be able to go to schools as close to their homes as possible. This delay will have a negative impact on some of the children with the highest needs because they may have to wait longer for the right school place or have to travel further to access a special school." The Conservative-controlled County Council, which needs to make another £45.1 million of cuts and savings to balance the books next year, has seen unprecedented demand and costs in children's services. That includes spending millions of pounds on transport to get children to school and having to pay independent providers to educate youngsters. Sarah Tuff, the council's director of children's services, previously accused some independent special schools of profiteering from Norfolk's vulnerable children. County Hall has even offered to build the schools, which would cost about £20 million each itself, but the DfE has not responded to that suggestion. Mrs. Carpenter said, "The delay is not only impacting on our children, but it is having a significant financial impact on our SEND budget, which is already in substantial deficit. It means we will be faced with increased cost in the independent sector and additional travel costs that weren't budgeted for in our funding agreement with the government. We acknowledge the DfE is currently undertaking a major review of all aspects of SEND policy at the national level and that this is complex work. But we are frustrated that this process appears to be holding up those agreed proposals and that they have not been proactive in communicating with us so we can plan locally. Whilst we agree mainstream inclusion should be a key priority, we also need to have sufficient state special school places for children with the most complex needs." The DfE said work on special schools continued and each project needed to be assessed for value for money. The department said it was prioritising decisions on schools due to open in the shorter term. A spokeswoman said, "The evidence is clear that this government inherited a SEND system left on its knees, which is why, as part of our plan for change, we are thinking differently about what the system should look like to restore the confidence of families and ensure every child can achieve and thrive. We are already making progress by investing £1 billion into SEND and £740 million to encourage councils to create more specialist places in mainstream schools, paving the way for significant long-term reform. We are engaging in local authorities and trusts in the usual way and progressing work on special and alternative provision-free schools in line with our vision for the SEND system. The Downer Market School would cater for 100 pupils and the Great Yarmouth one would have 170 spaces for children. County Hall is creating a dozen specialist resource bases so children can get SEND support in mainstream schools, although the need to test grass has held up plans at Acle Academy."
Health officials are still not saying what caused a sudden illness that saw the West Road Medical Centre in Caister evacuated twice in the space of only 8 days. The health centre will likely remain closed for the rest of the week, as investigations are expected to take place into the air quality. The surgery, which is a branch of East Norfolk Medical Practice, shut its doors on Tuesday, May the 6th, after several staff became unwell. And it was the second time in just over a week the building was evacuated and emergency services called. Locals have expressed concern about the closure and its impact on the village, with worried people asking about getting prescriptions and seeing a GP on time. The local gas network, CADNET, has ruled out a gas leak at the site, but there has been no confirmation of what may have triggered the illnesses. A news statement from the practice on Monday, May the 12th, offered little detail. Caister Health Centre will remain closed until further notice, while the site continues to be investigated, a spokesperson said. This may take some time, and it is likely that the site will remain closed this week while the work is carried out. They added that all patient appointments were being rearranged at nearby surgeries and that patients would be contacted directly. Prescriptions can be ordered by phone or via the NHS app. One staff member said that after the initial incident on April the 29th, which saw 16 of their colleagues fall ill, windows and doors had been left open due to the warm weather. However, over the bank holiday weekend, the building was locked up, and when staff returned on Tuesday, May the 6th, with the windows and doors closed and temperatures cooler, symptoms returned, prompting the centre's closure until further notice. Rupert Lowe, MP for Great Yarmouth, said, "I have been in touch with staff and everything is under control. All is being done to reopen the centre as safely and as swiftly as possible. I support their efforts and urge constituents to be patient with staff. It's not their fault, and everything possible is being done to rapidly resolve the situation." Meanwhile, the pharmacy, located in the same building, is partially open. In a post on social media, they said, "As you can appreciate, we will be very busy and very behind. Please only travel to the pharmacy or call if something is urgent. We will do our best to help and understand that shutting has been a huge inconvenience, and we're as desperate as you are to resume our usual service." The closure of the West Road site has left Well Pharmacy on the High Street inundated with prescriptions. The centre was first evacuated on April the 29th after 16 members of the staff fell ill and four took themselves to hospital. It reopened the following day, but only 1 week later, on Tuesday, May the 6th, the unexplained symptoms struck again when two women needed hospital treatment and a further five were assessed at the scene.
A busy A road near Great Yarmouth will close for 3 nights on 2 occasions due to carriageway works. The A1064 main road, located in Filby, will close, with works set to be split up into 2 phases. The first phase is programmed to start on or soon after May the 22nd, with the second starting June the 5th. The scheme will involve adding a new layer to the existing surface. Works are expected to take up to 3 nights each to complete, weather permitting. A section of the A1064 will be temporarily closed to vehicles between 9 a.m. and 4 p.m. for the first stage, and 7 p.m. to 5 a.m. for the second phase in June. While the work is underway, a fully signed official diversion route will be in place. There may be some short delays to vehicle access to properties while works takes place in front of driveways.
And a police update. Police have re-bailed a suspect for a third time in connection with an arson attack at a hall in a Norfolk village. Officers arrested a man in his 20s shortly after an outbuilding fire at Winterton Hall in Winterton caused a massive explosion following a series of smaller ones at about 6:30 a.m. on February 17th. Flames quickly spread from the outbuilding in Spindthrift Close to a nearby burger van, igniting a gas canister and causing a massive explosion, according to neighbours. The fire led to 4 neighbouring homes being evacuated. The man, arrested in connection, was first bailed on April 16th and then again until May 7th and now until May 23rd. Fire engines from Great Yarmouth, Galston and Acle were called out and were on the scene for about 5 hours. Winterton Hall has rooms which are available to let on Airbnb, and the owners live there. A police cordon was put in place to prevent public access to the property while the active police investigation was underway.
And this is a look around life at Peel Ports Docks in Great Yarmouth. It is a port that is continuing to put Great Yarmouth on the shipping map and also in the national headlines. Peel Ports site in Great Yarmouth is a bustling site which is thriving in the maritime world with an array of exciting projects going on. Last October, it made national headlines by welcoming the MV Ruby that docked at the port carrying 20,000 tonnes of ammonium nitrate. And more recently, it garnered national attention when the Stena Immaculate oil tanker, which caught fire off the coast of Hull when it was struck by the Solong off the East Coast Yorkshire coast on the 10th of March, arrived to be assessed. And the Stena is still in Great Yarmouth. While port bosses are justifiably proud that the outer harbour has the facilities to welcome these vast vessels, the harbour also quietly goes about its business of operating in the world of cargo trade. As an example of its versatility and what it can handle, earlier this month, train carriages, which were no longer required to transport passengers up and down the UK, were shipped to Mexico, where they will be given a new lease of life when they return to service. Richard Goffin, Peel Ports Director, is proud of the facilities at the site and the work going on there, and he has big plans for the future. He said, "The Port of Great Yarmouth is seeing a very strong performance, with vessel calls and cargo volumes growing steadily in recent years. Between April 2024 and March 2025, approximately 3,500 vessels called at the port, and our operatives handled around 2 million tonnes of cargo. This is thanks to the larger capacity and capability made possible by the port's deep water outer harbour, and we expect vessel calls and cargo volumes to keep growing in the years to come. The UK ports industry is the second largest in Europe, handling more than 500 million tonnes of freight each year, as well as over 60 million international and domestic passenger journeys. There are about 120 commercial ports in the United Kingdom. These include all-purpose ports such as London and Liverpool, ferry ports such as Dover, specialised container ports such as Felixstowe, and ports catering for specialised bulk traffic such as coal or oil. There are also a large number of smaller ports, essentially catering for local traffic or specialising in particular sectors such as fishing or leisure boating. But the Great Yarmouth Port stands at the forefront of the UK's maritime and offshore energy industries, strategically positioned to serve both domestic and international markets. With its prime location on the east coast of England, the port provides an invaluable gateway to the North Sea's thriving offshore energy sector, as well as a key logistics hub for industries such as agriculture, construction, project cargo and manufacturing. The port's facilities, combined with its deep water access, support a range of services including the import and export of goods, vessel repair and the handling of heavy lift cargoes. Great Yarmouth's role in the renewable energy market has also expanded significantly, with the port playing a pivotal role in supporting offshore wind projects, providing a vital base for operations, maintenance and the storage and delivery of components. Last May, a new wharf opened at Great Yarmouth's Outer Harbour and welcomed the largest vessel ever to dock in the town up until then. Yeoman Bridge, also known as Big Red, was the biggest self-discharging bulk carrier of its kind at the time and delivered granite from Scotland. The 55,000-tonne cargo ship anchored at the new 3-acre wharf at Peel Ports. The site, with an 800,000-tonne per annum capacity, allowed Aggregate Industries, a construction materials manufacturer, to expand its operations into the region for the first time. The launch of the new berth allowed for a steady supply of granite from a quarry at Glensander in northwest Scotland. The rock will be used for various energy and infrastructure plans underway in the region, such as utilities reinforcements and highways upgrades, the Sizewell C nuclear power station, the East Anglia Array and the Norwich to Tilbury Great Grid upgrade.
Well, more news shortly, but first some events from Vision Norfolk. Question: can you escape Wonderland? No padlocks, no keys, just your wits. Step through the looking glass and into a world of curious riddles, twisted logic and unexpected puzzles. In this immersive escape room experience, you'll need clever thinking and teamwork to find your way out of Wonderland. I'd be there forever. On Tuesday the 10th of June, that is, at both 5:30 p.m. and 6:45 p.m. Spaces are limited and it's at the Castle Quarter, Timberhill entrance. Next is a flying experience on Monday the 24th of June. Come and enjoy a 20-minute flight in a light aircraft, obviously with a pilot. Minibus will be leaving from the Bradbury Activity Centre at 9:30 a.m, returning around 3 p.m. Bring a packed lunch. Refreshments are provided. We assume they're liquid ones. Please note that this is a weather-dependent event. If it's too wet and windy, no flights can take place. And finally, a visit to the Time and Tide Museum in Great Yarmouth on Wednesday, the 18th of June. The Time and Tide Museum have an exhibition on called Cabaret Mechanical Marvels, and there will be a handling exercise. The minibus will leave the Bradbury Activity Centre at 10 a.m. and return at approximately 4 p.m. Lunch is available in the museum cafe, pre-order required, and for details of this and to book any of these events, contact Mark or Helen on 01603 573000 extension 341 or 342. That's Mark or Helen on 01603 573000 extension 341 or 342, or you can email mark.smith@visionnorfolk.org.uk, and Vision Norfolk is all one word. Okay, time for some more news, following which we have some info from Edward, Vision Norfolk's Hub Coordinator for Yarmouth, about the bus changes in the Yarmouth Town Centre.
It was an extraordinary story that unfolded on the sands of Hemsby, when a group of boys playing in the dunes were shot at by a mystery sniper taking pot shots with an air rifle. Now, the full details behind this bizarre incident can finally be told after a woman wrongly accused of being responsible came forward. Mandy French, 55, was arrested over the incident and spent months on police bail as officers investigated her. She has now spoken out after the real culprit was revealed by the Mercury last week as Jason Davis, 51, a convicted paedophile who lived next to her. Miss French described how she had been bullied and ostracised by others in the village who believed she was responsible. She also revealed how police had seized her replica antique blunderbuss, which she used as an ashtray, as they thought it might have been used in the incident, even though officers had retrieved Davis's actual gun used in the attack on the day it took place. Miss French lives on the Marams, the row of homes closest to the resort's erosion-threatened seafront, and was at home on May the 4th last year when the beach was busy with crowds enjoying the sunny bank holiday weather. Shots were fired from an air rifle at a group of boys who were playing on the dunes near the properties. Two 13-year-olds were hit and wounded, with one requiring hospital treatment. Dozens of police swarmed the scene in search of the gunman, and Miss French was arrested and piled into the back of an officer's car and taken in for questioning. She was eventually released on police bail, but it was 3 months before she was told she would face no further action. Her neighbour, Davis, is now serving 2 years in prison for the shooting, as well as other unrelated offences. His conviction in February was not publicised, and Miss French said she had lived in the shadow of the shooting and been taunted about it in the village. "I just felt like I was on my own and nobody cared and nobody believed me," she said. "It's horrible to think believed I would do that." "When Jason was put in prison in February, I thought finally everyone would believe me and my name would be clear and it would be in the papers. So when his sentencing didn't appear, I was disappointed." Miss French said she'd been at the library on the day of the shooting and returned in the afternoon to find Davis having a barbecue in his garden. He told her that children had been playing on the sandy cliffs in front of their properties, and Miss French went to tell them to play elsewhere to prevent them adding to residents' erosion concerns. "I went down and had a polite go at the kids and told them to please not play there as the cliffs are threatening." She said they had refused, so she went inside to send a message to the venue where the group, who were on a rugby tour, were staying. "I came out of my house and ended up going to Jason's," she said. "I ate a burger he had cooked and wandered further up to see my friends. When I got there, I saw all the police on the beach," she added. "Said to my friends that I couldn't believe someone had called the police because I had a bit of a go at some children. When I was being arrested, I genuinely didn't believe there'd been a shooting. I was in disbelief and astonishment and so confused," Miss French said. "I had no idea that anybody had shot a gun. And to this day, I still can't pinpoint the exact moment the monster living next door would have shot the gun. Officers searched my house and took a replica blunderbuss-type pirate's gun. It used to be an ashtray, which they've now actually returned to me," she said. Davis was not arrested until 2 months after the shooting and was only charged on September the 15th. He appeared in court on February the 21st, when he was sentenced to a total of 2 years for possession of a firearm when prohibited and 2 counts of battery in relation to the boys he had shot. But from the back of the car, I saw them take the air rifle from Jason's house, but he was not arrested, something I'll never understand. Miss French said she then went out of her friend's property to ask what was going on, and it was at this moment she was arrested. He was also sentenced for two breaches of a sexual harm prevention order which were unrelated to the Dunes incident. Miss French, a former care assistant and former care manager at the day centre, said that before he was accused of the shooting, Davis had tried to put the blame on her. Jason told everybody I was crazy and did all sorts of low-level intimidation tactics to try and scare me, which was wearing me down, she said. I was so ill with anxiety. I moved here because I wanted a quiet life. My health hasn't been great, but this house was detached in a quiet area and suited my health needs, both mentally and physically. But it's not turned out that way. I was bullied, ostracised in the village because everybody thought it was me still. I still think until the EDP story the other day, which revealed Davis was the gunman, that they still didn't believe that. I couldn't walk my dog, Hendrix, through the village anymore. I felt so alone. But I'm pleased the truth is finally out. Davis's criminal record stretches back decades. In 2003, the then 29-year-old was put on the sex offenders register and was sentenced to 12 years in prison at Northampton Crown Court. The court heard he had been carrying out systematic sexual abuse against three youths in Daventry and Milton Keynes over a five-year period in the 1990s. A jury found him guilty of 9 attempted rapes, 8 indecent assaults, and an act of gross indecency with a child between April 1994 and December 1999. Throughout the hearing, he maintained his innocence and accused all the youths of lying.
A Norfolk pensioner has warned people about an online scam after he lost more than £3,000. Keith Piper, 70, said he had been trying to raise money for a visa to bring his wife, Melanie, to Great Yarmouth from the Philippines when he was targeted by fraudsters posing as a legitimate loan company. He said he came across a Facebook ad for a firm calling itself UK Finance, not to be confused with the financial services body of the same name, which has since issued a warning about the alleged scam. Mr. Piper, who works as a school bus driver, said the company claimed it could provide him with a loan to help cover the approximately £5,000 necessary for the visa application fee. They first asked for a payment of £25. Then once that was paid, they came back and said there were administration fees, he said. It was always around £120 to £150 each time. Instead of transferring money to a business account, he said the scammers instructed him to buy gift vouchers from retailers such as Currys and Asda and send them the codes. In total, he made 8 or 9 payments before realising there was a problem. To start with, I thought it was a way of raising the money, but I didn't think any more of it. But then I thought, hang on, this is going on a bit, he said. He lost £3,275. Mr. Piper said he has reported the scam to the City of London's Police Action Fraud Team, but continues to receive messages from the company asking if he wants to proceed. He and his wife Melanie met on a dating site and married in February last year. They've been apart for the past 16 months. I feel very hurt because I have a wife over in the Philippines who is desperate to come to live with me in the UK, he said. UK Finance, the legitimate financial trade association, has published a warning on its website stating that it does not offer loans or any financial products and that anyone doing so in its name is acting fraudulently. We are aware of a potential scam involving people being offered loans for an upfront fee by an individual posing as a representative of UK Finance, they said. If you think you may have fallen for a scam, Please contact your bank immediately and report it to Action Fraud, they added. Mr. Piper said he believes scammers are targeting people in lower income areas who may be more vulnerable to this kind of approach.
And a housing story in Hemsby. A housing association is targeting a large field where it wants to build almost 100 houses. Orbit is seeking permission from Great Yarmouth Borough Council to build 93 so-called affordable homes on land east of Yarmouth Road in Hemsby. The site was granted outline planning permission in 2018 amid concerns about pressure on services and the impact on a residential care home nearby. A detailed planning application spanning appearance, landscaping, layout and scale was then submitted in 2021. Since then, however, the plans have remained in limbo, with no decision yet made, as the application itself has been subject to a number of changes and a staggering 267 separate documents. In October last year, Orbit bought the site, taking over from developer Allison Homes. And the Housing Association has now submitted a revised bid for the reserved matters, with a decision due in June. The new plans are for all 93 of the houses to be categorised as affordable, with 56 of them for social rent and 37 for shared ownership. The houses will be a mix of 1 to 4 bedroom houses and bungalows. They will all have electric vehicle charging points and will be heated with air source heat pumps. The plans also include 52 new trees across the site, as well as 2 public open space areas. According to a planning statement, Orbit says that since purchasing the land, they have been working on amendments to the reserved matters. They were to improve the layout of the development and increase the amount of affordable housing it provides, and to substitute the proposed dwelling designs with their own house types. A decision on the bid is expected by June the 27th.
A 42-year-old chicken catcher who was convicted of a sexual offence against a teenage girl has been spared jail. Marius Maximus of Rodney Road, Great Yarmouth, denied having sexual activity with a child under 16 in the town between August the 1st, 2022 and September the 30th, 2022. However, he was convicted after a 7-day trial in March at Norwich Crown Court. Lynn Shirley, prosecuting, said Maximus was convicted unanimously of sexual activity with the 13-year-old victim, who cannot be identified for legal reasons. Maximus, a Lithuanian national who spoke through an interpreter, appeared in court for sentence on Wednesday, May the 14th. Oliver Haswell, mitigating, said he accepted the offence crosses the custody threshold. He said Maximus maintains his innocence despite being found guilty of the offence. Mr. Haswell said the time Maximus had spent on remand, the equivalent of a 6-month prison sentence, was highly significant and effectively meant he had served his sentence. The barrister said Maximus was a hard-working man, and as the primary breadwinner, his time on remand had had a substantial effect on the household income. Recorder Michael Turner said there had been a significant age disparity between Maximus and the victim of around 20 years. He said she had been assaulted in her own home, where she was entitled to feel safe and secure at all times. But Recorder Turner acknowledged the amount of time Maximus had spent in custody on remand and his lack of similar previous convictions. He imposed a 6-month community order and ordered Maximus to undertake up to 15 days rehabilitation activity requirement, RAR. Maximus was also made the subject of a sexual harm prevention order, SHPO, for 5 years, and was also put on the sex offenders register for 5 years. He was also made the subject of a restraining order, banning him from contacting the victim directly or indirectly, also for 5 years.
at another longer story, this time rather sadly dealing with the death of a newborn baby. The parents of a baby boy who died within an hour of being born have called for more transparency and better communication during labour. Arlo Leawood died just 46 minutes after his birth at the James Paget Hospital in Gorston in September 2023. At a two-day inquest into his death, the court heard that he had been born during a forceps delivery in theatre after being manually turned there from a back-to-back position. Prior to his birth, Arlo's parents, Alexander and Alana Leawood, said they had been unaware of any concerns from midwives. But the medical notes and the labour revealed a different reality, showing concerns over de-escalating heart rates and abnormalities in a urine sample. Mrs. Leawood, 26, of Highland Drive in Worlingham near Beccles, raised her concerns at Norfolk Coroner's Court. In a statement she said, "To this day we're still in shock. Alex asked multiple times if everything was going to be okay, and we were always told that everything was absolutely fine. Therefore, to be told this repeatedly and to receive the outcome we did is absolutely devastating." The court heard that Mrs. Leawood became pregnant in December 22, when she was aged 26. The pregnancy was deemed low risk, so she was offered midwifery-led care from the James Paget. She said her pregnancy went well, and all routine midwife checkups and abnormality scans were largely reassuring. On September the 9th, she began experiencing backache and sharp pains and was asked to come into the maternity ward to be triaged. The staff decided to keep her in overnight due to high blood pressure. Her pulse and blood pressure were also checked and a urine sample was taken. She said, "I was not aware of most of these results at the time. I was just asked if I felt okay, to which I said yes." Regular cardiocartography CTG scans, a technique used to monitor the fetal heartbeat and uterine contractions during pregnancy and labour, were carried out and these came back normal. She was then induced on the afternoon of September the 10th and began labouring. By 6:05 p.m, midwives were struggling to record Arlo's heart rate. 20 minutes later, the CTG scans became concerning, but Mrs. Leawood said she was unaware of this. Arlo's heart rate would continue to de-escalate, but would recover within a time range that did not cause alarm to midwives. Mrs. Leawood was checked by a senior midwife at 11:14 p.m, but said she wasn't told why. She added, "At no point was I aware there were concerns about Arlo's heart rate." A scan half an hour later revealed Arlo was in a back-to-back position. This is where the baby's head is down, but their back of their head and their spine is against the mother's spine. This position can make labour longer and more difficult. It was recommended that she be moved to theatre, where they were able to move Arlo and then use forceps to help him be born. He was born at 0:52 a.m, weighing just over 7 pounds 1 ounce. Mrs. Leawood continued, "He was not crying or breathing. He was floppy and he quickly lost all of his colour. They placed him on my chest so I could see and rubbed him with towels to try and make him cry, which did not work. I couldn't understand why he was not crying. I thought everything was fine. Alex cut the cord and Arlo was taken to be resuscitated." At this point, she said she knew his heart was beating, but it was very slow, and Arlo had to be incubated twice as CPR was performed. "I was stuck lying on the bed," she said. "It was very upsetting that I couldn't go to him or be with him. After 46 minutes, the decision was made to stop. I was told he was gone, and he was passed to me to hold. We were devastated and completely shocked. I couldn't understand what had happened. Since Arlo's death, his parents have raised concerns regarding what they believe is a lack of communication with parents during labour. They also feel they were not given any alternative options. Mrs. Leawood said, "I was very confused as to what was going on. I did not understand that Arlo might be struggling as we were not told fully what was happening at every stage. The doctors told me Arlo's death was completely unexpected, therefore this would be investigated. I understand that there was nothing wrong with our boy after, and that the signs of infection during the post-mortem were not enough to cause his death. I question whether he was left too long, struggling, causing him to be born in such a poor condition. I question whether if a C-section had been offered earlier, we would have him with us. We know nothing can ever bring Arlo back. However, we hope that going forward, hospital staff will be more open with parents about any concerns they have. This way, parents can make the right decision for their baby." Samantha Jones, a midwife at the James Paget, said, "It was never an expectation having Arlo come out like that, ever. Even now, I don't get it." The inquest continues, where Area Coroner Yvonne Blake will call more live witnesses from the hospital.
Right, as I mentioned, news from Edward on changes to the local buses following the redevelopment of Market Gates bus station. Market Gates is reopening this coming weekend, and it's in two stages. From Saturday the 17th of May, all southbound buses through the town will use their new stops in Market Gates. And those are the X1, X11, the 7 and the 901 to James Paget Hospital, Belton and Lowestoft will use Stand D. The 1, 1A, 8, 983 to the JPH Lowestoft use Stand E, and the 2, 3, 3B, variously to Barrack Estate, the James Paget, Borough Castle, use Stand G. Buses will then stop at a new bus stop on the quay near the Town Hall, rather than the existing stop outside the Town Hall. On Saturday and Sunday, northbound buses will continue to use their temporary stops on Howard Street outside the police station. But from Monday the 19th of May, all northbound buses through the town will use their new stops in Market Gates. And those are the X1, X11, 7, 901 to Norwich are using Stand B, with the 1, 1A, 8 and the 983 to Caister and Martham using Stand C. On their way into town from Galston, buses will stop at a new stop on Regent Street, close to the old post office. This effectively replaces the current stop on Stonecutters Way. On leaving Market Gates, the next stop for buses will be Northcote Street, opposite the church, for the 1 and 1A, plus the 7, 8, or outside the rail station for the X1 and X11. OK, if you've digested that, it's time for the last of this week's news. So back to Margaret and Andy.
Seven locations where NHS bosses hope to build new GP surgeries have been revealed as the region braces for a surge of new housing. Local health leaders have identified seven sites that may need new surgeries in the years to come, including in Attleborough, Diss and North Walsham. They said no specific plans have been drawn up for the septet of schemes, but that studies would be carried out to see whether new builds could be delivered. A report going before the local primary care committee this week has outlined the ambitions for the sites. The sites being considered are in the catchment area of the following surgeries: Attleborough, Bridge Road Surgery, Lowestoft, Bungay Medical Centre, Diss, Humble Yard Practice, which serves Heatherset, Marlbarton and Cringleford, North Walsham, Shrublands, Galston and Taverham. A local NHS spokesman said, NHS Norfolk and Waveney Integrated Care Board, ICB, is committed to ensuring primary care services which can meet the needs of our growing population. The ICB's estates team regularly reviews the current and future demand for GP premises and works closely with local practices and specialist healthcare developers to identify where additional capacity may be required. A number of potential schemes are being explored to address this need. These proposals are at a very early stage and remain subject to detailed feasibility studies and formal NHS approval processes. The report states that should the schemes progress, bosses are hoping they will be able to secure funding from outside the NHS to finance the schemes. The ICB did not confirm details of where this funding would come from. It comes at a time when the board is considering a range of cuts across primary care, including the potential closures of the region's only walk-in centre and some of the physical bases for the out-of-hours GP service.
And now a political story. A Yarmouth MP will not face criminal charges following a probe into allegations he made verbal threats towards Reform's chairman. The Crown Prosecution Service, CPS, has said there is insufficient evidence against Rupert Lowe, who was accused of making threats of violence towards Zia Youssef. It led to the launch of a police investigation in March, and the Great Yarmouth MP was suspended from Nigel Farage's party. The relations intensified existing tensions between the two politicians, with Mr. Lowe being permanently kicked out of Reform. Malcolm McAfee, head of the Crown Prosecution Service's Special Crime Division, said, "Having considered a number of witness statements, we have concluded that there is insufficient evidence to provide a realistic prospect of conviction. The CPS's function is not to decide whether a person is guilty of a criminal offence, but to make fair, independent and objective assessments about whether it is appropriate to present charges for a criminal court to consider. Based on the careful consideration of this evidence, we have decided that our legal test for a criminal prosecution has not been met." Following the announcement, the now independent MP has accused Reform of weaponising the criminal justice system against me, calling it a brutal smear campaign. "This was not normal political infighting," he added in a statement published on X. "This has put my political future and my liberty at risk, all because I dared to raise constructive criticisms of Mr. Farage, stood firm on deporting illegal immigrants, and pushed for reform to be run democratically, not as a vehicle to stroke one man's ego." Mr. Lowe also indicated he's in talks to create a new party that will offer an alternative to Reform. The CPS added that the case could be subject to a victim's right to review, which allows alleged victims to ask for the decision not to prosecute to be reviewed.
And this next item is about a fight against water meter poles. Furious council leaders will urge the people of Norfolk to unite and fight controversial plans to put up hundreds of poles across the county. Norfolk County Council is set to officially signal its strong opposition to a water company's contentious plans to install scores of wooden poles up to 15 metres high. Essex and Suffolk Water intends to erect an initial 157 poles in Great Yarmouth alone, with plans to install up to 350 in other parts of Norfolk where it has customers. The company says the poles are needed to transmit data from water smart meters to its monitoring system, but angry leaders at Conservative-controlled Norfolk County Council have tabled a motion for next week's full council meeting, making it clear the authority will fight the plans. County Hall leaders say the company should have made use of existing networks rather than putting up scores of new poles. At a meeting of the full council on Tuesday, May the 20th, Jane James, the council's cabinet member for corporate services and innovation, will seek support from councillors to battle the proposals. Her motion, on which all 84 councillors are able to vote, will call for the water company and its contractor Connexxion to halt their plans and urgently explore alternative solutions. She stated, "The introduction of such a large number of poles in residential areas is unacceptable and will cause significant disruption to local communities. Norfolk residents should not be expected to bear the burden of unnecessary infrastructure that they neither requested nor welcome." The motion also calls for the council to mobilise support from other local authorities, residents and relevant stakeholders in pressing for a solution that prioritises the well-being of Norfolk communities and avoids unnecessary infrastructure clutter. Under permitted development, the water company does not seek the usual planning permission. The county council is only able to object on safety grounds if the highway was compromised. Essex and Suffolk Water's customer area includes Great Yarmouth and Galston in Norfolk and Beccles and Southwold in Suffolk. Anglian Water, which provides water for the rest of Norfolk, has also been installing pillars to monitor smart meter usage. Essex and Suffolk Water and Connexxion previously said the digital network was needed so smart reader readings would be more accurate. The company said, "While we always aim to use existing infrastructure, in Great Yarmouth this wasn't possible due to limited coverage from their current networks."
And I have another hospital-related story, but this is all about organisation. The former chief executive of the region's Integrated Care Board has been given a top hospital role just days after quitting Norfolk's most senior NHS position. Tracy Bleakley has been appointed as the new Executive Managing Director of the Norfolk and Norwich University Hospital, the NNN, a newly created role as part of the effective merger between the county's three main hospitals. It comes in the same month that she announced her departure as chief executive of NHS Norfolk and Waveney, the region's main health body. Ms. Bleakley's role is one of a number of new appointments made as part of the formation of the Norfolk and Waveney University Hospitals Group, NWUHG. This new collaboration between the NNN, the James Paget University Hospital in Galston, and the Queen Elizabeth Hospital in King's Lynn has seen them operate under a single CEO. Ms. Bleakley has been appointed to the post on an interim basis, with the role described as a 6-month secondment. Meanwhile, Shane Gordon, who is currently in a senior role at the East Suffolk and Norfolk Essex NHS Foundation Trust, has been seconded to the equivalent role at the Paget. Joe Segersby, who was most recently chief executive there, has been appointed to a senior group role as the new managerial structure takes place. She will serve as a group delivery officer and deputy group chief executive, in a role which will see her overseeing the rebuilds of the Paget and the Queen Elizabeth in King's Lynn. Marcus Thorman, meanwhile, currently Chief Finance Officer at the NNN, is taking up the role at a group level. Alice Webster, former Chief Executive of the Queen Elizabeth, left her role this week. Leslie Dwyer, Chief Executive of the NWUHG, said, "Alice made her decision to leave and did that with grace, dignity and all of the things that I know and admire about her. I believe appointing internal secondments is the right way forward, as it gives us time to establish these roles within our group, giving our potential internal candidates the breathing space to become more familiar with our new ways of working as a larger team and prepare for the role of Executive Managing Director, which is not that different from previous CEO roles. Prof Dwyer said the management structure of the new group model, which formally began this month, is still being finalised but is aiming to be complete in October. Asked if the new structure would provide greater value for money than the previous model, Prof Dwyer said, "It will absolutely bring savings over time." NHS Norfolk and Waveney confirmed that Ms Bleakley did not receive an exit package when she left her role at the organisation at the start of May.
A windscreen replacement business has said it has seen a rise in vandalism into motors. Armstrong Windscreens, which operates across both Norfolk and Suffolk, shared a post on social media saying they have noticed an increase in random damage in Great Yarmouth and Goulston. They posted, "Don't get us wrong, vehicle vandalism happens up and down the country every day. But in the last few months, we've seen a much big increase when it comes to random vehicle glass damage in the Great Yarmouth and Goulston area. Norfolk Police lists vandalism as one of the top reported crimes in certain areas of the county. According to the force's website, last month saw 24 incidents of criminal damage and or arson reported to them in the Great Yarmouth area. In South Yarmouth last month there were 18 incidents flagged, and in Goulston last month there were 4 incidents of criminal damage noted. The repair and replacement service, Armstrong Windscreens, was established in 2017, and its headquarters are based at Acornew Road, Great Yarmouth."
And another reorganisation story, but this one is a warning about it. A Norfolk peer has warned that local government reorganisation could cost billions of pounds in pension payouts for council staff who lose their jobs in the shake-up. Lord Fuller, former Conservative leader of South Norfolk Council, warned the government could be sleepwalking into the huge bill through its shake-up, which would include the abolition and replacement of all Norfolk's councils. He said, "The total cost of a pension for a 55-year-old senior council officer who joined after school could realistically reach £500,000. It only takes 2,000 people out of 1.8 million local government workers to be in that category to reach £1 billion. Lord Fuller, who remains a South Norfolk District Councillor for Brook, told the Times newspaper, "The government has made these announcements without any consideration of these pension costs. In their haste to decimate what's left of the Conservatives in the shires, they could be writing themselves another £1 billion black hole to be filled by already hard-pressed council taxpayers." A government spokesman said, "This is speculation, and no decisions on proposals have been made. Our reorganisation packages will be locally led, putting more money in working people's pockets and saving significant taxpayers' money to be reinvested in public services." Stephen Morphew, leader of the Labour group at Norfolk County Council, said, "This is an irresponsible comment that can only be interpreted as trying to undermine modernisation of councils to make them more efficient and accountable. Inventing a scenario that isn't going to happen and inflating its costs to an extreme in order to scare public opinion away from the positives is very poor from a member of the House of Lords." Under the government's plans, all 8 of Norfolk's councils would be abolished and replaced with new unitary authorities which would provide all services. There is division between Norfolk's councils on whether the best way to do that is by having 1, 2 or 3 unitary councils. Norfolk County Council has said it would prefer to see 1 or 2, while South Norfolk Council, which Lord Fuller used to lead, says 2 would be the best option. All the other district councils, Norwich, Breckland, Broadland, Great Yarmouth, West Norfolk and North Norfolk have told the government three councils are the best solution. Norfolk leaders last week received government feedback on the initial submissions over the shake-up. Councils have to submit a final submission by September. The government has said it wants consensus and is prepared to impose models if that is not forthcoming.
And more news about James Paget Hospital. The James Paget Hospital has delayed the start of a new system to take payment for its car park after a technical fault. The hospital announced that it was introducing a new ANPR camera system to its car park a fortnight ago. It was supposed to come into force yesterday, but after issues with one of the pay stations, it won't be introduced until later this week. A spokeswoman for the hospital said, "A technical fault with one of the pay stations has meant the hospital has delayed the start of its new payment system for public parking, which was scheduled for Monday, May the 12th. When the new system becomes operational, we will also accept cash payments at our patient travel and cashier's office in the main hospital foyer. Exact open times to be confirmed, before a dedicated cash pay station is installed at the front of the hospital later this summer. We anticipate the new system beginning later this week and will confirm this when we are satisfied the fault has been corrected. Until it is fixed, there will be free parking."
A police officer who appeared to strike a disabled man in a wheelchair will not face disciplinary action, the complaints watchdog has said. Footage captured on CCTV and camera phones showed the male constable pushing and punching during a confrontation with Michael McQueen after using Parva spray during the incident in the centre of Great Yarmouth. Witnesses said Mr. McQueen, who has one leg, was in the middle of the road and holding a bottle of alcohol when the officer arrived on the scene outside a Londis store. Norfolk police said at the time that the officer had been threatened with a glass bottle and spat at by a verbally abusive man during the incident in May 2024. The officer was not suspended but had taken time off duty immediately after it came to light, the force added. The matter was referred to the Independent Office for Police Conduct, which looked into the actions of the PC and a colleague. It has now concluded no evidence to suggest that any officer behaved in a manner which would justify bringing disciplinary proceedings. The Independent Office said in a statement that the actions of two officers had been investigated, including whether necessary, proportionate and reasonable force was used. Its inquiry included speaking to witnesses and interviewing Mr. McQueen. It also checked the constable's general conduct with their dealings with the man, the care given after using Parva on him, and whether he was treated differently because of his disability and mental health. The statement added, "At the end of our investigation, we found that no reasonable tribunal could find the use of Parva was not necessary, reasonable and proportionate in the circumstances, as the man was being verbally abusive and threatening towards the officers, had spat at a colleague and was resisting efforts of officers to restrain and handcuff him. No criminal charges were brought against Mr. McQueen for the incident, but he was later sentenced to 32 weeks in prison for sexual assault and assaulting a police officer and making threats in a separate incident.
Oxfam donation sparks search for soldier's family. When Jane Gosling opened a bag of items handed in at the Oxfam shop on Magdalen Street in Norwich, she expected an everyday mix of old clothes and bric-a-brac. Instead, she found a large leather-bound Bible and a mystery. "It wasn't until I looked at it that I realised it had a story," said the 58-year-old volunteer. Inside the front cover, there was an inscription dedicated to Lieutenant Adrian Harry Stewart, who was killed in the First World War. Curious about the man named in the dedication, Ms. Gosling began researching. Lieutenant Stewart was the youngest son of Colonel Harry Stewart of Hopton Hall and had served with the Gloucestershire Regiment. He was killed in action in Garoua in Nigeria in 1914 and has no known grave. We were quite moved by it in the shop and I wanted to find out more, Miss Gosling said. It's a stunning Bible with no damage to it. It was so heavy I could barely lift it. Her research led her to Reverend Nigel Lacey at St Margaret's Church in the coastal village of Hopton, who confirmed the Bible had once belonged to the church. But no one knows how it left or where it had been in the meantime. Miss Gosling returned the Bible to the church on May the 1st. It was placed back on the lectern and used in prayers during the Sunday service. We've all become quite fascinated by the young man in question and tried to research him, Miss Gosling says. I'm unaware if there are any living relatives or if anyone knows why the Bible left the church. It would be very interesting to find out more about this Bible's story.
Well, that's it for this week's edition, which is copyright 2025 of the Great Yarmouth and District's Talking Newspaper Association. News content is adapted mainly from the Great Yarmouth Mercury. However, the Great Yarmouth and District Talking Newspaper Association accept responsibility for editorial decisions made for this recording. Your newsreaders next week will be Andrew and Alison. So, we hope for your company then for much more of your local news. In the meantime, from all of us here at Grapevine, stay safe and well, and bye for now.